Set for Mother's Day. We have a Mother's Day tribute for you as well. We played it before, the song of Everything a Mom Says in a Day, condensed to 3 minutes, sung to the William Tell Overture. You've heard that before? You'll love it. And Sophia Smallstorm, creator of 9/11 Secrets, part one, part one, Demolition. Is that what it was? The one I saw last weekend. Will join us next hour to chat for a few minutes. An abundance of weird stories. This one just, I can't seem to pry myself away from this one. I really can't. I've read this two or three times today. And it's another one of those intriguing stories that has to do with religion. You may not think so when I share it with you, but it is religion. It is. The story concerns two children, a 15-year-old girl and a 12-year-old boy, and their mother, who have lived for about 2 months with the decaying body of a 90-year-old woman perched on the toilet of their home's only bathroom. Huh? Yeah, that's right. They did this on the advice of a religious superior who claimed the corpse would come back to life. The children cried hysterically after a deputy who came to their home. This is in Wisconsin, the seat of Wisconsin. The deputy came looking for this old woman, Madeline Alvina Middlesworth. The deputy ordered the kids out of the house because of the stench. The children were in foster care as of today. The mother, Tammy Lewis, and the self-described bishop, one Alan Boucher, remained in custody on felony counts of being a party to causing mental harm to a child. Now, according to the criminal complaint, the old woman's sister called sheriff's officials Wednesday and asked them to go to the home about 80 miles north of Madison, Wisconsin, to check on the woman who had not been heard from for some time. And when the deputy arrived, she encountered the mother, Tammy Lewis, who is also known as Sister Mary Bernadette. The mom, who's 35, initially refused to allow the deputy to check on the old woman, telling her that she was on vacation, and then saying she had to check with her superior first. But she eventually let the deputy in. The house smelled of incense and burned wood. There was religious material everywhere and hymns playing on the stereo. According to the complaint, when the deputy opened the last closed door, she smelled what is referred to as decaying matter and noticed something piled on what appeared to be a toilet. Miss Lewis, Tammy Lewis, the mom, said told the deputy that the old woman had died about 2 months earlier, but that God had told her, Miss Lewis, to be patient because the old woman would come back to life if she prayed hard enough. The boy, the 12-year-old boy, told a detective that he had considered running away because he was uncomfortable with the situation. He told him his mom. He told the police his mom's bishop, this Boucher, that demons were trying to make it look as if the old woman wouldn't come back to life, and that if her body were to be discovered, he and the girl would have to go to public school and get jobs. Man, it's just how does that happen? You don't have to respond. Purely rhetorical question. How does that kind of a situation develop? How does that happen? Hmm. okay, I've got everybody in a good mood now. Hello. Did anyone stay past the first sentence of that story? No? Oh, okay. Oh, God. That was awful. Eleanor wants me to remind everybody that tomorrow, that's Saturday, May 10th, that's the day to set out canned food, soups, vegetables, canned meats, tomato sauce, so on and so forth, or dry foods like boxes of rice or pasta or cereal. Anything that's not in glass and is not outdated, put it out by your mailman, mailbox. Put it in a plastic bag or a paper bag so the neighborhood mailman can pick up these donations. It goes to Second Harvest. That's the, national project organization that tries to feed this nation's hungry, because for some reason our social systems are in such disrepair that food banks and organizations like Second Harvest have to exist if people are going to eat. According to a press release at their website, their warehouses are extra low now and they need everybody's help. You can put the cans and goods you collect into a bag and then set the bag by your mailbox so the mailman can grab it while he makes his rounds. This is something that all of us can do. Just put it out there. Canned goods, anything that's not in glass and is not perishable. Thanks, Eleanor. Second Harvest. And this is their Stamp Out Hunger campaign. You get it? Stamp, mailman, okay, you get it. But try to remember to do that. That's something that we all can do, and I think all of us can do it. And it's a very simple and yet amazing thing to do, because you know you have no way of knowing, nor do I, until someone tells us how an act of food sharing like that can multiply just incredibly. You know, you get 1,000 families contributing 4 or 5 items, or 10,000 families, or 100,000, or 500,000, and all of a sudden, there's some substance there to restock Second Harvest and some of these food banks. You want to do that? Okay. Email from Larry in San Francisco. Mike, I was one of the people who took issue to your early skepticism about Bernie Ward. Based on the strength of his outstanding radio work in a world ruled by right-wing radio, Ward was an exception, a staunch, courageous liberal, and a genuinely brilliant thinker who also devoted tremendous energy to community service programs in the San Francisco Bay Area. There was a good reason that he had a strong following for decades. While I still believe it was premature to condemn him before the case evidence was revealed, there simply is no defending Bernie now. You were right, unfortunately. This tragedy is further proof that shocking personal demons can be found even in those with stellar public personas. The saddest aspect of this, at the worst possible moment in our country's history, we use yet another of the staunchest critics of right-wing policy to horrific stupidity. Bernie, you screwed up when we needed you most. Larry, San Francisco. I think this letter was in response to my kind of cavalier taunt the other night about people who accused me of being a little bit too quick to judge the Bernie Ward case to, you know, maybe you owe me an apology. That was half said in jest, but I just want to clear something up. Larry and anybody else, when this case came up, when it was revealed last, December? I didn't sit on this radio program and say Bernie Ward is guilty as charged. As a matter of fact, I said I hope it's not true. But what I went on to say was that in cases where white males who are white heterosexual males who are usually the major perpetrators of this kind of sexual insanity, when they are caught, the ones that are well-educated, the ones that are connected, like Bernie Ward was, or a professor, or a priest, or someone of stature in the community, when they are caught, there is this repetitive claim by these men that they are doing this. I don't want to see this porn. I'm just doing it to research the subject for my my civic club. That's it. My radio program. No, a book I'm writing. That's it. There you go. It's a book I'm writing. And when Ward was busted, that was the comment I made, that the fact that this is usually what, well, maybe not usually, but this is often what these males say when they're caught, and then the fact that he was a Catholic priest. And I think people took offense at that, too. This is a very offensive program. I'm the first to admit that, okay? But I just wanted to clear that up. I didn't say Bernie Ward was guilty when he was busted. I said, I hope it's not true, but historically, people who are busted like this and immediately offer that defense are guilty. I hope this is the last time we have to talk about this.
They'll eat the bread of set tomorrow. Ward took the town presser. They'll eat the bread of sorrow.
It is 21 past the hour. There's something we want to play for you here. Reverend Rod Parsley, the Senator John McCain's spiritual advisor and TV evangelist, megachurch pastor from Ohio, hates Islam, hates gay people, hates just about everything, which puts him right in the mainstream of television Christian preachers. You got to hate everything except, well, you know. According to David Korn of Mother Jones magazine, Parsley has called on Christians to wage war against Islam. I mean, just come right out and kill them. You know, just walk up to a Muslim and kill him. Parsley considers Islam to be a false religion as opposed to what? The religion it came from? Judaism? The religion that is its brother? Christianity? What? Parsley also hates separation of church and state. Did I mention gays? The right of a woman to have privacy. He compares Planned Parenthood to Nazis. It just goes on and on and on. Now, McCain actively sought and received Reverend Rod, or Ralph. His real name is Ralph. I don't know why he uses Rod. Well, I do know, but I just don't want to say anything. McCain sought and received Parsley's endorsement in his bid to become the Republican nominee. McCain has called Parsley a spiritual guide. He hasn't said whether he shares Parsley's vicious anti-Islam views. That's because the mainstream media refuses to ask him. So we've taken matters into our own hands, joining Mother Jones to present the truth about McCain's pastor. Thanks to Mother Jones and the Huffington Post for putting this little audio piece together. Listen to this and tell me why the media isn't giving this as much coverage as the Reverend Jeremiah Wright.
Is an anti-Christ religion.
Woo!
That intends through violence to conquer the world.
And I'm very honored today to have one of the truly great leaders in America, a moral compass, a spiritual guide, Pastor Ralph Parsley, who is here.
The fact is that America was founded, I'm going to stagger you right now, America was founded in part with the intention of seeing this false religion destroyed. Muhammad received revelations from demon spirits, not from the living God.
I want to say thank you for being here. I want to thank you for, Rob, for your kind introduction.
America has historically understood herself to be a bastion against Islam in the world.
For your leadership and your guidance, I'm very grateful you're here, sir.
In fact, I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
I do not believe our nation can truly fulfill its divine purpose until we understand our historical conflict with Islam.
Yeah.
I want to assure you, he should be talking, not me.
When it comes to Islam, now the greatest religious enemy of our civilization in the world, it's dangerous.
We were built for the battle. We were created for the conflict. We get off on warfare.
We get off on warfare? Islam was created, what did he say, Kathy, by demons?
Muhammad received his messages from demons, from and demons. America was created in part
to destroy
Islam.
Now, why is this not being given as much attention? Or, as a matter of fact, this has been given no attention. Why not? Look at the Barack Obama, Jeremiah Wright situation that you couldn't escape. There was no place to go. For how long? A month? It's finally starting to move off the TV screen because 100,000 people died in Myanmar. So that's what it took to move Jeremiah Wright off the screen, 100,000 deaths halfway around the world. Now, of course, Rod Parsley would probably say it doesn't matter because they're Buddhists over there, and Buddhists are even worse than Muslims, right, Rod? How do people like that, like Rod Parsley and John McCain, get into such positions of influence in this country? Rush Limbaugh, how does that happen? These are obviously madmen. These are not rational people. And their irrationality tilts over into that red zone where, you know, everything's just about to blow. The cylinders are about to pop. RPMs are up around 80,000. It's just like a whine coming out of the engine. And nobody seems to pay attention to that. But let a Jeremiah Wright give a sermon, 12 years ago, 14 years ago, where he talks about, I don't know what the hell he talked about. I forget now. Talked about something. Let him talk about America has delivered terrorism to other parts of the world, which is absolutely true. And, of course, media goes nuts. But you have somebody like this freak, this Ralph or Rod Parsley or Pastor James Hagee. Is Hagee's first name James? Is that what it is? I think that's what it is. You have these people spewing this venom. And McCain just skates right over the top of it. Hey, hi, how are you, friends? My friends, listen, my friends, your pastor's endorsed me, my friends, so vote for me, my friends, okay? I'm Mike Malloy, this is NOVAM. Stay with us. That ring on my hand, and I thank my God for one more perfect man. His love has been true. White as the snow, are you lost in the blood of the Lamb? Is your soul out spotless? Is it clean as the snow?
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 25 before the hour. Speaking of these double standards, MediaMatters.org has released a letter they have written to both the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, that's right, regarding the difference in attitude where it concerns Cindy McCain's tax returns and John Kerry's what was her name Teresa Hines Kerry's tax return. Do you remember back in 2004? During the coverage of the 2004 election cycle, both the Post and the Wall Street Journal had these rather pointed editorials calling on Teresa Hines Kerry, wife of John Kerry, obviously, to release her tax returns. And they filed, you know, separately, as Cindy and John McCain file separately. Now, so far, neither publication, neither the Post or the Wall Street Journal, have demanded that Cindy McCain do the same. Why is that? Huh? Why is that? So, Today, Media Matters for America released letters that they sent to the editorial boards of both papers calling on these particular publications to explain their lack of consistency, even though the letters will probably be ignored, and nobody in the country really gives a damn. Nobody's raising this as an issue except MediaMatters.org because David Brockstein, because they are aware the degree to which everything is stacked against a liberal or a progressive or a Democrat, even a Democrat. It's just insane. The letter to the Washington Post from Media Matters says, on May 4th, 2004, the Post printed an editorial headline, Theresa Hines carries taxes. And in this editorial, the Post called for Senator Kerry and his wife to, quote, make her tax returns public, end quote, in the interest of transparency. From the beginning of this year to the date of this letter, the Post editorial board has not made the same request for the release of Cindy McCain's tax returns or even noted that John McCain's campaign has refused to release such documents. Now, the reason this caught my attention was the other day when there was an article about Cindy McCain. She more or less said to the media and the American public to go diddle itself. You know, no, I'm not releasing my tax returns, and I never will. It's none of your goddamn business. Well, she didn't say goddamn. I said that, but she might as well have. It's astonishing, the double standard. These are those little things that zip by. McCain being endorsed by two rabid dogs who claim to be Christians are as removed from Christ as Satan is. But they still claim to be Christians. They want to see Jews dead. They want to see Muslims dead. And they frankly don't give a damn how many Christians die as long as they get their little fat naked bodies raptured up to heaven. And the media just lets it go. Never says a word about these two rabid dogs that John McCain says are his spiritual advisors. But let somebody like Jeremiah Wright give a sermon in the privacy of his church, not on television, in the privacy of his own church, and they go insane. Why is that? Why the double standard? Why the double standard? It's always there, isn't it? It's always there. The Wall Street Journal, July 1st, 2004, had an editorial headline, Kerry and Disclosure, which called for Kerry and Theresa Hines Kerry to release her full filings with the IRS in order to be as transparent as possible with the American public. Doesn't that sound familiar? Huh? But from the beginning of this year to the date of the letter sent by Media Matters, which is today, the Journal editorial board has not made the same request for the release of Cindy McCain's tax returns. Why is that? Why do you suppose that is, huh? I have any geniuses in the audience tonight? Cindy McCain and John McCain seem to slide right past things like religious endorsements from rabid dogs, or the refusal to release her tax returns, and yet John Kerry or Barack Obama are crucified, pardon the use of that word, for precisely the same situations. Why is that? Anybody know? Can I see some hands? Oh, I don't see a lot of hands going up out there. Do you want to? How long is okay, this is the mom song. Let's play that. Let's play that for everybody. We may play it the third hour too, but y'all have to hear this. This is a woman. I don't know the circumstances of the song, but it's on YouTube. And she's singing on a stage in front of an audience. And we would like to dedicate this to all mothers, because Sunday is Mother's Day. I don't know how seriously people take that holiday. When my mother was living, I always got her a card. Kathy's mother is living. She'll get her mom a card. You just kind of do that sort of thing, I guess. But, okay, this is called the Mom Song. So kick back here for 2 minutes and 55 seconds and enjoy.
Get him out of bed. wash your face, brush your teeth, comb your sleepy head. Here's your clothes and your shoes. Hear the words I said. Get up now, get up and make your bed. Are you hot? Are you cold? Are you wearing that? Where's your books and your lunch and your homework at? Grab your coat and your gloves and your scarf and hat. Don't forget, you gotta feed the cat. Eat your breakfast, the extra cellophane. Shovel, choose slowly, but hurry. The bus is here. Be careful. Come back here. Did you wash behind your ears? Play outside. Don't leave a rope. Would you just play fair? Be polite. Make a friend. Don't forget to share. Work it out. Wait your turn. Never take a dare. Get along. Somebody come down there. Clean your room. Fold your clothes. Put your stuff away. Make a bed. Do it now. Do we have all day? Were you born in a barn? Would you like some hay? Can you even hear a word I say? Answer the phone. Get off the phone. Don't sit so close. Turn it down. No texting at the table. No more computer time tonight. Your iPod's my iPod if you don't listen up. Where are you going and when noon and what time do you think you're coming home? Say thank you, please, excuse me, makes you welcome everywhere you roam. You'll appreciate my wisdom someday when you're older and you're grown. Can't wait till you have a couple little children of your own. You'll thank me for the counsel I gave you so willingly, but right now I thank you not to roll your eyes at me. Close your mouth when you chew. We'd appreciate. Take a bite, maybe two, of the stuff you hate. Use your fork. Do not burp, or I'll set you straight. Eat the food I put up on your plate. Get an A. Get a door. Don't be smart with me. Get a grip. Get a hero. Count 2, 3. Get a job. Get a life. Get a PhD. Get a ghost. I don't care if you're started. You're grounded until you're 36. Get your story straight and tell the truth for once, for heaven's sake. And if all your friends jumped off a cliff, would you jump too? If I said it once, I've said at least 1,000 times before that you're too old to act this way. It must be your father's DNA. Look at me when I am talking. Stand up straighter when you walk a place. For everything and everything must be in place. Stop crying or I'll give you something real to cry about. Brush your teeth, wash your face, put your PJs on. Get in bed, get a hug, say a prayer with Mom. Don't forget, I love you. And tomorrow we will do this all again. Because I'm off for forever. You don't need the reason why. Because I said so, I said so, I said so, I said so. I'm the mom, the mom, the mom, the mom, the mom.
That, there goes the voice again. That is hard as hell to get the lyrics, but I think the lyrics are at the mom song on YouTube.com. You've got to see this. I don't know if the woman who sings it wrote it. I don't know why not, but it is an absolute work of genius. Absolute work of genius. The mom song at YouTube.com. What else we got? Do we have anything? Is it time to go home yet? Oh, yeah. You all know what blue dog Democrats are, right? Yellow dog Democrats are, that's a term that was coined here in the South back in the day, that somebody would vote for a yellow dog if it were a Democrat. This is before the Nixon and Wedge issues and colored folks got the right to vote and, you know, sit down on the main level of the theater to watch the movie. But there is something else called a blue dog Democrat. A blue dog Democrat is a Democrat in name only. He or she hasn't converted to becoming a Republican yet, hasn't completely sold its soul to hell. So it calls itself a blue dog Democrat. And there is in the U.S. House a blue dog Democrat coalition. And they did something the other day that I got to tell you about when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mother, should I run for president? Should I trust the government? Mother, do you think they'll drop the bomb?
and coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. I was waiting to see who would send it in, and Bina did. Regarding Rod Parsley's statement with John McCain there, patting him on his ass or whatever he was doing, about this country was founded to fight against Islam, the Treaty of Tripoli, you know, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, that's where it comes from, fighting the Barbary Coast pirates way back in the 1700s, near the end of the 18th century, but a long time ago. That kind of history that George Bush doesn't like. From the Treaty of Tripoli, which at the time, of course, was a Muslim nation. And, gee, last time I checked, that entire swath of North Africa is still Muslim, isn't it? Article 2 of the Treaty of Tripoli. As the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion, as it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of Muslims, and as the said states never entered into any war or act of hostility against any Mohammedan nation, it is declared by the parties that no pretext arising from religious opinions shall ever produce an interruption of the harmony existing between the two countries. It's dated 7 June 1797, and Bina writes, I think given its proximity to the Declaration of Independence and so on and so forth, that we can pretty clearly say it is authoritative and proves the Reverend Mr. Parsley to be full of, flatulence when he claims the U.S. was founded on the purpose of destroying Islam. Well, thanks, Bina. The shocking part to me is that John McCain just let it roll on. just let it roll on. And media have not done anything to refute any of this. Now, regarding the poor dead grandma that was kept on the toilet, her corpse was kept on the toilet because the mom and the children were told, Jesus is, or God or somebody is going to resurrect your grandma. Boy, Prairie 2 writes, Mike, I grew up in the other end of the Adams County, from where Nisita, Wisconsin is located. That's where all this happened. You would not believe the weird crap that goes on up there in the woods. The cult you're talking about is a Catholic splinter group along the lines of Mel Gibson, only not as sane. The stories are numerous. Among them, the movies Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the character of Norman Bates were inspired by real events in that neck of the woods. With Bates, the real story is even creepier. Another story, the sheriff's daughter murdered her rival with a frying pan. The guy she wanted had just got out of prison on a retrial for a double murder he was framed for by her father, the sheriff. Dead bodies turn up almost every hunting season. Two guys that were in high school at the same time I was ended up being serial killers. I have alibis for most of the unsolved murders. This is only a small fraction, and you thought Georgia was strange? Well, thanks. Now, where was I? The Blue Dog Democrats. Yesterday, these Blue Dog Democrats decided, along with Republicans and the Bush crime family, that veterans did not deserve, we talked about this the other night, the educational benefits, the new GI Bill. What's it called? The GI Bill 2008 or something. So this group of Democrats, and you can find them online, just look up Blue Dog Democrats, voted against the cost of veterans' education benefits in a war funding measure, which delays consideration of the whole bill now, this so-called supplemental. Now, this is the same group of filthy, disgusting Democrats who would vote to take this country into war on false intelligence and lies. And this is the same group of so-called blue dog Democrats who repeatedly vote to fund the occupation of that country to the tune of, what are we up to now? Half a trillion? $750 billion? But these filthy bastards choose to turn their backs on the armed forces when those that are coming home do come home. When those that are able to come home do come home and may want an education. No, these Democrats say, screw them. No, and you know why? Because, why did they object to the funding, these Democrats, to the funding of this? You see, they call them blue dog Democrats because they're supposed to be fiscal conservatives, right? And the blue dogs objected to the bill, saying a provision to provide these educational benefits for returning soldiers violates the, quote, pay-as-you-go, end quote, rules, which require offsetting new spending by cutting something else. Yeah, I know, you're way ahead of me. You're way ahead of me. The idea that the benefits should be on a pay-as-you-go basis is ridiculous. This whole goddamn filthy invasion and occupation has not been pay-as-you-go. Who's kidding whom here? We have spent hundreds of billions of dollars we don't have to violate the sovereignty of another country or two or three or four. And we're not going on this pay-as-you-go that these Democrats claim to so deeply respect, right? This is the part that drives me crazy. This is the part that makes me realize, Malloy, you're not a Democrat anymore. You're something else. Maybe you're just, you know, just a stone-cold psychopath, but you're not a Democrat anymore. So the Blue Dogs say they are not going to support veterans' education benefits because it's not pay-as-you-go. These are the same shameless bastards who continue to fund George Bush's murder spree. We'll be back after the break with Sophia Smallwood, or Smallstorm, I'm sorry. She is the producer and the moderator of the book 9/11 Secrets. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. I mean, the film, 9/11 Secrets. Ah! Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Molloy. I mentioned, I think the early part of this week, that I had some time to look at some documentaries that I have accumulated here last weekend because I had some bronchitis. And one of the ones I looked at and watched, was absolutely fascinated with, was 9/11 Mysteries, Part 1, Demolitions. And the narrator and producer of that documentary joins us now. Sophia, I hope I have that right. You are the producer and the narrator?
And the writer.
And the writer.
And the director.
And the director.
But not the video editor.
But not the video editor.
Or the music composer.
Sophia Smallstorm, is that an interesting name?
That's my working name.
That's your working name. I have a working name too, but if I used it on the air, I would lose my broadcast license. But that's okay. It doesn't really matter. What made you decide to put together this documentary?
Well, Mike, as you probably know, it's difficult to see things in this world because there's so much control of the mindset, of the media, of events themselves. So I felt, and I was actually urged by others, to put together a video or a film, which is a more sophisticated name, which would enable people to see very clearly and very logically what happened on 9/11, which would kind of identify the anomalies and provide a scientific basis to explain them. So the film is something that enables people to see, with a capital S.
I think most people who doubt the official story, and I've been saying this for a number of years now, I don't at this point claim to know what the truth of that awful day was, but I do know that what has been told to the American people and sold to the American people is absolutely a lie, as far as I'm concerned. Any administration that will lie us into a war will lie to us about the conditions that they sought in order to take us into the war. So, I'm very comfortable with the fact that I don't believe anything that this particular government says. But a lot of us, in talking this over with a couple of friends, a lot of us who come to this reluctantly, because I think one has to come reluctantly to the idea that one's own government would take one just right into the depths of hell with something like what occurred on September 11th. In order to get to this, we've got to have a starting point. And the starting point for me has been since, I believe, the very day, September 11, 2001, when I watched on CNN these buildings collapse into their own so-called footprint without a degree, I'm exaggerating here, but without a degree of variation in the way they collapsed. And I couldn't believe, I had been in the Trade Towers, as most, I guess, people who have ever been to New York have been in the Trade Towers. Why is it that we, all that to say, why do you think that most people, maybe not most people, a lot of people come to their doubting by watching the collapse of those buildings?
Why do they come to their doubting?
Doubting the official story by watching videos of the collapse of those buildings.
Well, the videos show the building collapsing in a mere 10 seconds or so. And if you contemplate that they were constructed, over-engineered, as the term goes,
right,
they consisted of 500,000 tons each of steel and concrete. And how they could just disappear, literally, before our eyes in 10 seconds. And video evidence doesn't lie. I mean, we had many, many versions of this video, shot by all kinds of people, you know, witnessed by people who were watching in the aftermath of the plane strike. And the buildings just were gone in 10 seconds. So that has to be questioned. How could that possibly happen with giant, huge steel beams? You know, I think we had a total of 287 steel columns. In part, the core was 4 inches thick. Of steel, you know. I'm not talking about the beams being 4 inches thick. I'm talking about the steel itself. We had buildings that were a quarter of a mile high, 110 stories, and they were gone in 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you have to start doubting, unless all you want to do is believe what you're told and move on.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting parts of your film was the interview with, I believe it was a maintenance worker, the one that said for several weeks prior to September 11th, he heard what sounded to him like a moving huge metal containers around on the floor of the floors above him. And yet when he would check at night, he wouldn't find anything there. And I would assume, I think from your film, maybe this comes independent of your film, but from your film, I get the impression this was the noise produced by the people who were setting charges, getting ready to bring this building down. Is that the conclusion you came to in your film?
Well, now remember that actually what you're doing is you're confusing two witnesses.
Oh, okay.
One is Willie Rodriguez, who was the maintenance worker who heard and was affected by sub-basement explosions. He was in the basement, and actually there was another maintenance person who was severely burned, but all these people were basically thrown to the ground by these enormous explosions, and that was just about concurrent with the plane strike. Not quite, which is, again, very, very significant.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that something enormous happens in the basement in the way of an explosion, and then a few seconds later, the plane strikes the building dozens of floors above. So that suggests that these were independent events and there was a coordination of some kind of program. But if the planes had been purely hijacked by Arabs, as we were told, how would it be that something else, an enormous detonation, would have taken place in the basement? The other person, the witness, who spoke of bumps and thumps and thuds on the floor above him was Scott Forbes. He was employed by Fiduciary Trust, and he did hear for a number of weeks, as I'm sure all his colleagues did at work, these enormously loud, crashing, assumed to be construction noises going on the floor above, which had been vacated mm-hmm. by the company Aon. And when Scott went up to check out of, like, sheer curiosity, couldn't understand how an office upgrade, meaning a layout, a relaying out of cubicles and furniture, could possibly result in this kind of ceiling-shattering noise, because the ceilings were shaking above him. And he went up to look, and there was absolutely not a thing visible, suggesting that it was all taking place behind the wall. So that's the matter you're referring to.
I got you. Yeah. I'm sorry for not making that distinction. But those two anomalies or events however they're identified, it makes it just almost impossible for me, and I guess for a lot of people, to believe that, as horrifying as it was, these plane crashes on the 105th or the 90th floor, whatever it was, we saw it on television, that would result in those buildings collapsing. The other thing that I found interesting, since your film and others have come out, Loose Change, some other ones have come out, is the fact that, as far as I've been able to find out, no steel structure like this anywhere in the world has ever come down as a result of a fire on any floor, I guess. Is that correct?
Yes. In fact, the World Trade Center itself, I believe it was the North Tower, suffered a severe fire in the 70s, and there was no damage of this kind, meaning that the building certainly didn't fall down because it was up and standing in 2001. So, again, and the question I have to ask is, if the Arabs hijacked the plane and banged into the towers with them, how did they know that the towers would fall an hour or so later? Was that just pure bonanza luck?
Well, let's talk about that. I have to take a break here. Can you hold on?
Sure.
We'll come back in just a minute with Sophia Smallstorm. She is the person who directed, produced, narrated 9/11 Mysteries, Part 1, Demolitions. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
To suspend the Constitution and sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts of Kenneth Lee? Oh, it's national security of the public scrutiny. Policy of legal coup d'etat. Oh, we have a shadow government.
Talking with Sophia Smallstorm. She is the producer, director, writer, and narrator of 9/11 Mysteries, Part 1, Demolitions. Sophia, a friend of mine a couple of days ago sent to me a working definition of cognitive dissonance. I think all of us understand that term, but he sent it anyway. Here's a quick definition for people who don't know. People resist information they don't want to think about because if they did think about it, it would create conflict and oblige them to act in ways that depart from their comfortable habits. They usually have at least partial awareness of the information without having moved to full acceptance of it and are thus in a state of denial about it. cognitive dissonance is the irrational inability to incorporate rational information. That seems to me to be a fairly good working definition of what so many of us in this country, when we think about 9/11, actually go through.
When we think about it in terms of what we were told?
Yeah, the idea that in order to begin to get away from the official story, we have to approach something that is almost unapproachable, and that is that our own leaders would allow or orchestrate such an event. And that causes, I know it does in me, a very, very uncomfortable feeling.
Well, one of the things to consider is that 9/11 might not be like finding one shell on the beach. You pick up this shell, you're walking along, and you go, what's this? And you start examining it. When you look around, there are loads of shells on the beach. And so why would this be an isolated event? Would it not be part of a series of events? If we wake up today to 9/11, it might be a good thing to look further back into history and examine other events, which are referred to as false flag terror events. Because 9/11 was what they call a psychological operation. It was generated to change the laws of the United States and create a fear culture here, the perception that there are enemies, namely Muslims, who are going to come and get us. So it's part of a series of events that have been created to engineer the public mind.
One question that I've had, and I think other people have had it too, if there was a conspiracy to collapse these three buildings, why make it appear so obviously a demolition? Why not make it appear to be a more of a chaotic, shattering collapse as a result of these commercial aircraft flying into the buildings? Why? I guess what I'm trying to say is why does it appear so much like a demolition?
Well, I think the answer is in the word controlled. Demolition is one thing. You can take a wrecking ball and you can just shatter a building with it. But the term controlled demolition is exactly that. The demise of the building is all contained in one spot such that it doesn't damage the neighborhood around it.
Right.
Now, what existed around the World Trade Center? Well, it was the world of finance, Wall Street. Perhaps it was that was considered, that we want to do this, to contain it just within this small area, not cause the entire city of New York to be shut down, or the lower part of it, which it was for a few days. But really and truly, this was a psyop, as I repeat, something to make a mark, and then the public was encouraged to continue with life, but now their whole mindset was absolutely transformed.
All right, which brings up another question, and we're about to go to another break. Can you stick around a little bit longer?
I can stay as long as you want.
Okay. You might, if you would, consider this during, or the audience can consider this question during the break. Why was Building 7 brought down? What was in Building 7 that was not struck, was not part of the planes flying into these buildings? All the information, I think it's very clear to anyone who cares to listen, is that the order came from the man who owned the building to bring it down. Why has that not been just like the major sticking point in any explanation regarding the events of 9/11 that would say, well, this, you know, the government's story about this is true? And if you can address that when we come back. What was in that building, if anything? Maybe nothing. Maybe it was just a further attempt to terrorize people. What was in Building 7 and why a decision was made to bring that one down, which seems to me to be the one building coming down that most people would have said, oh, well, there you go. That was a controlled demolition. So the other two must have been a controlled demolition. So the whole story falls apart. It's Building 7 I don't quite get. We're talking with Sophia Smallstorm. Stay with us. About 25 before the hour, we're talking with Sophia Smallstrom, who is the creator of the film 9/11 Mysteries, Part 1, Demolitions. We're talking about the collapse of the Trade Towers. Building 7, Sophia, could be described as the real anomaly of those three buildings coming down, since nothing hit it.
That's right.
What's the story of Building 7?
Well, first of all, you're asking me as though I were one of them, right? I should say for the record that I'm not.
Right.
All I can say is that remember now that Building 7 was a Johnny-come-lately to the World Trade Center complex. It was built in 1985, whereas the towers were completed in the 70s. And Building 7 was also owned outright, I believe, by Larry Silverstein, who is a player in this picture.
Right.
And Building 7 was considered the command center for the complex. It had the mayor's protected emergency bunker, but of course the mayor wasn't in there that day. He was wandering the streets. And it had offices for CIA, Department of Defense, Secret Service, and it also had enormous fortification on certain floors. They had gone to the trouble to create very thick glass that would resist winds, they called it, but one could say explosions, many other things. Yet it wasn't even used on 9/11 for that purpose. So you could call it the hub for the World Trade Center, and people have theorized that that's where the master planning, if you want to call it electronic, for the event might have been contained. Others have theorized that it was a beacon for the plane. But at any rate, it had to be leveled for whatever reason, and that command was definitely given. And there were certain news entities who were apprised of it before it happened. This has become famous. The BBC reported that it had collapsed 20 minutes before it collapsed, and so did a couple of American news agencies. So that's all very, very peculiar. But what remains to be said about the two events, the towers collapsing earlier in the morning and Building 7 later, was that these collapses were different in their execution. Building 7 was much more like a traditional controlled demolition in that it had that trademark kink. And then it came down into its footprint, and it had a rather large pile of rubble left in its wake, whereas the towers were much more unusual. They were probably first in the history of overt demolition. They were very tall. They were very thin. They were like pencils. So if you had to implode them, meaning pull them into themselves, how would you do it? It would be very difficult to pull something a quarter mile high and only 200 feet wide into itself. So those were designed to be exploded, and they had these what I call banana peel plumes, geysers, that actually served to obfuscate or conceal the way that they were coming down. We just saw tremendous volumes of ash. But again, they were pulverized. And one thing that bears mention here is the degree of pulverization of those towers is very, very extreme and extraordinary. That's not the degree of a normal controlled demolition executed by companies that do this all over the world. So that suggests that this was a very highly evolved, very sophisticated technology. And that is not something that you run across in the civilian world.
What is interesting, and I think most people will agree to this, I think, maybe not, that there is no discussion of the events of 9/11 allowed, I guess is the right word, in mainstream media, not on television or radio or corporate newspapers. As a friend of mine said, questioning the official story has been labeled treasonous. Most people in this country have no idea that a truth movement exists or that there are films out like yours. And yet, when I have discussed this issue over the past 5 years with close friends, I tend not to bring it up anymore because it's just pointless to me to I'm not seeking converts. I think everybody has to come to their own conclusions about this. But what I found is that people who don't want to entertain the idea of this being somehow involving the government of George Bush, that their reaction is almost poisonous. And I'm not talking about other media people. I'm talking about my friends. If I say, well, you know, the events of 9/11 are not as you know, we've been told, the reaction I get is visceral, immediate, and scary. Why do you think that is?
Well, the thing about 9/11 is once you get into it, you've really entered the Warren, the rabbit Warren, all the rabbit holes. And there are many things that are associated with 9/11. And the friends that you're speaking of prefer not to know about those things. They prefer to believe in the illusion, reality as it has been created for us, almost as though we were little children. And you will become a pariah among your friends if you suggest or insist that they remove their blinders and start looking around them the way that you are. But the beauty of this is, Mike, that you will make new friends, different friends, and thus we have a divide created in this country, which I believe is also part of the plan. There is an intent to create two schools of thought, and of course the ones who can see with a capital S are going to be outnumbered initially by the ones who refuse to see, but it requires courage and a kind of persistence and faith to adhere to the power that is conveyed to you by being able to see. You become free. These are at the end of my movie. I hope you played it long enough to see those final messages, those text messages.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But that's really the heart of all this, is that you become free. Knowing is the first step to freedom. You can't do a damn thing about anything if you don't know anything. You will just become engulfed and swallowed into the belly of the whale. You know, you'll become part of the giant morass. You will not have a voice, and you will not have any ability to choose your destiny. But those who can see, and those who stick with that and insist on their right to see, will have much more of a hand in creating their destiny. So that's the beginning of it all, seeing.
Well, another friend of mine said that there may be no satisfaction out of understanding the truth of 9/11 except understanding the truth of 9/11. And I would tend to go that way. I have to tell you, I am a rather faithless human being. Sophia, I don't believe in forces in the universe that are acting either this way or that. I'm almost an ice cold rationalist. So I can understand what you just said. I think the only end result for me, the best I can hope for, is what my friend suggested to me. The only reason that you would want to know the truth, Malloy, is so that you know the truth. And the idea behind that is that if enough people know the truth, no matter what the issue at hand happens to be, then you reach a truth tipping point, if you will, where the lie can no longer sustain itself. And I think that's the reason I keep questioning or refusing to buy into this story put out by the government, because I want to know what happened. And I can't accept, there's just too many coincidences, quote, quote, too many anomalies, quote, quote, too many things that occurred that would have required just this amazingly complex nexus of events all happening at the same time to create this. I went back today and read the Vanity Fair article that came out a couple of years ago, where the online version of this article, this is about the NORAD, not NORAD Command and Control Center, but the other one, the Junior Command and Control Center that handle all this, the Northeastern Military Flight Control Office or whatever. And in the Vanity Fair article, after the writer gives a couple of paragraphs, he plays, you can click on a button there in the article and listen to the actual transmissions. Somehow that was given to him, I guess through a Freedom of Information request over and over and over again. And in listening to the Vanity Fair recordings and reading the article, I'm left, and then coupling it with everything else, I'm left with the idea, look, this was, as you and a lot of people put it, a false flag operation designed to bring this country down, to radically change it. Let me put you on hold again, Sophia. I want to talk a little bit longer with one more break, and then I promise we'll let you go. We're talking with Sophia Smallstorm. She is the producer, director, writer, and so on and so forth of 9/11 Mysteries Part 1 Demolitions. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, we've been talking with Sophia Smallstorm, who is the producer, director, writer, and narrator of 9/11 Mysteries, Part 1 Demolitions. Do you feel, Sophia, that you know the overarching truth of the events of that day?
Well, truth is a very big concept. I can respond to that question in part. I can do as you did a few minutes ago and say that what we've been told is not possible, not probable, that the laws of physics themselves do not support the story we were given. But you see, those who engineered this event, and you have to actually look beyond the American government, you have to understand that there is an engineering of the globe going on, that these entities have had years to plan this, and that 9/11 was not an isolated incident. It's part of a chain. It's part of a development. And therefore, it's very difficult for us on the receiving end with very little information, nothing except our hands and eyes and thoughts and the trading of knowledge that we can do, which is fortunate. It's difficult for us to put this together in its entirety.
Do you think the overarching truth that has to exist about these events, whether it is a global event, part of a global event, or just something cooked up in the minds of these criminals in the Bush administration. Do you think the truth will ever be out there for the American people just to take a look at? And now, by that I mean the truth of the event. There have been several cataclysmic events in America's history that I guess the truth is still not out there. Do you think the truth will ever be out about this one?
Well, it depends on the people. If the people decide that they want to know the truth, they have to get a bit more vocal about it. But we have a massive engineering of the public mind, and I cannot repeat this enough times. Most people out there are so, I'll just say it, dumbed down, that they're not even themselves anymore. They've lost their original thinking capacity. They've lost their desire to be themselves. They have been encouraged to comply with trends and conform, and they're just robots. So as long as we agree to be robots, the truth is not going to be given to us, and we're not going to look for it.
Well, that's certainly a good answer. I agree with that. Sophia, when does part two come out, 9/11 Mysteries?
Well, part of the issue is my funding. I paid for 9/11 Mysteries part one myself, and it was very expensive. It's hard to make a high-quality video. You really have to give certain tasks to professionals. I mean,
sure.
I can work for free myself, but there's no way I can edit on the level that the person who really crafted this movie with me could do. And then the other thing is there has to be a ripeness in the public mind to discuss certain aspects of Part 2, which is hijackers and planes.
Mm-hmm.
And Americans are not willing, if they would, I've presented facts of physics and science to the American public, juxtaposed against the video evidence, what they can see with their own eyes, even if they weren't there. Now, that's the beginning. Those laws don't change. But the nature of Part 2 is much more slippery, and it has to do with double identities. There's very good work being done by the Pentacon researchers, PENTACON. The Pentagon itself, that issue, as you may have been told or heard or found out yourself, is very hotly debated and a place where one can drown in disagreement. But there still are facts that pertain to that. So there's also, as I said, this is not contained within the United States. There are entities, individuals involved in this story who operate for other countries. And when the American people are willing to understand that their country is not being run by Americans, then that's the time to do part two. But I have to wait till the audience is more prepared.
All right. Sophia, thank you. I hope we stay in touch because I would like to have you on again as the events warrant it. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time tonight, okay?
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
All right. Take care. Sophia Smallstorm, who produced the film 9/11 Mysteries, Part 1, Demolitions. And now I know there were several people on hold here who would like to ask questions, but I don't know if I made it clear when a couple of weeks ago I said periodically we're going to take a look at, we have different various guests on from different points of view about the events of that day. And it is not, I'm not doing this to get into a discussion. I mean, I'm not really asking technical questions of the guests that we have on. What I'm trying to do with this is to present people from that point of view. We all know the other point of view. The other point of view is the government point of view, the Bush crime family point of view, which is, here's what happened. I think everybody in this country knows that. Most of us have accepted that. So the purpose of this 9/11, this is not an inquiry. I'm not trying to uncover anything new. I'm not trying to be a trailblazer. This is just bringing onto the program people who have... made statements or done films or written articles that present the opposing point of view, the so-called 9/11 truth point of view. So that's what it's all about, and that's why we don't take calls. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 6 and a half past the hour. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. And again, just to recap what I was saying there at the end of the interview with the filmmaker, I decided a couple of weeks ago just to take a look from the perspective of I don't believe this garbage the government is feeding us about 9/11, to take a look at those events from that perspective. We will probably at some point have guests on this program who may be easy to demonstrate that they're just raving lunatics. I have no idea. We also plan to have engineers, structural engineers, people involved in the actual physics of the events of that day, as insofar as the buildings are concerned. Also, people involved in the from the point of view is of what happened to our North American Air Defense Command on that day. And perhaps some points of view about why all of this occurred on a day when the military couldn't decide if this was part of an exercise that had been planned for that day, which is great cover, or was it real world, as they say, real world world events. But when I have these guests on, I ask your indulgence here, and that is simply we're not going to take questions. I don't want to get into a big discussion. I don't want to get into phone calls where, all this disposition goes on or exposition goes on of a certain point of view. This is what I believe. And meanwhile, the guest is waiting for the question. So we're just going to talk with these people, invite them on the air, and then on various programs, we'll talk among ourselves, as the saying goes. Okay. Again, I'm not attempting to do anything groundbreaking here or anything all that radical, just to bring these guests on over an extended period of time and have them talk about these events. There are enough websites out there, enough research that has been done on both sides of the issue. A lot of people still believe, no, you know, if you're a truther, you're out of your mind. And from the other side, if you accept the government's story, you're a psychopath. That's great. That always makes for great rational discussion between two points of view, right? You're a psychopath. Well, you're just as crazy, or you're crazier. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. Ah, your mama wears bloomers. You know, what's the point of all this? But the whole thing has just driven me almost to the brink of screaming, furniture clawing, excitement, not in the positive sense of that word, watching this develop, this being this gulch, this gulf, as Sophia alluded to, between people. Now, as she said, some people have the truth, some people are blind zombies. I wouldn't take it that far. You know, I mean, although it may turn out to be that way, who knows? But I do know this. Any government that will lie us into a war will lie about this. It is, to me, it's just, hello, 1 + 1 = 2. Water boils to 212 degrees. The Bush crime family lied through its ass about the events of September 11th. I mean, these are just, it's just received wisdom. I mean, what is hard about this? If it's in the gory details, why did this occur at 9/11 when they said it occurred to 9/20? There you go. No, I'm not willing to put that fine of a point on anything. in the events of that day, I listened to the transmissions between these military air controllers, I guess you would call them, and fighter pilots today and so on and so forth. There was enormous confusion. At one point, the assumption was made that we had six and possibly seven planes under the control of hijackers that day. So the confusion that can reign is just, you know, I mean, that's a given. So, again, we're not trying to break new ground here. We're not trying to perform the Malloy program shock and awe. That's not what we're about. I'm hoping that through the process of listening to the guests that we'll have on, the process of our own discussions, you can walk away from this at some point with either one of several attitudes. Well, Malloy's out of his mind. Well, that was interesting. Well, I certainly learned a lot of truth. Well, okay, nothing's been answered. See, there's a whole menu here you can choose from. This is cafeteria talk radio. Take away from it what you want. But we are going to do it. And the emails from people that are suggesting that I'm some kind of a nutcase because I'm letting these guests come on or raising this issue, you know, please spare me. I don't need that kind of harassment. I really don't. If you are convinced that every aspect of the so-called 9/11 truth movement is nothing but bat squeeze, okay, then when you hear that I'm going to do a program about that topic, leave. That's all. We don't devote more than an hour to it. Well, I guess some nights, one night we devoted more than an hour. But it's never going to be more than an hour. So look at your clock, and you see, oh, it's 6 minutes past the hour, and he's getting on that topic. Okay, then come back 6 minutes past the next hour. And we'll go back into the stuff that you may feel more comfortable or less pissed off about discussing, you see? So, again, if ever there was a definition of truth seeker, it's what I feel about what happened on the events of 9/11. You, on the other hand, may be utterly convinced that there's nothing to seek, that the truth is already there. Okay, I happen not to feel that way. So, but that's the reason we're not taking phone calls when people call in or when we have these guests on. It's not that, you know, I'm trying to shut down discussion. There's enough discussion going on out there. I mean, there's reams of discussion. There's mountains. There's Mount Everest. There's Himalayas of discussion. Websites and you're crazy and so's your mother and here's the evidence and on and on and on and on. So that's the place to have the battles. You know, there are websites and message boards. You know, you're sick. You're crazy. It didn't happen. Yes, it did. No, it didn't. Well, they let it happen. They made it happen. Well, the Jews are behind it. You know, whatever the argument is. I'm not looking for argument here. Just trying to get to the truth. And as my main correspondent on this said to me, just knowing the truth is what's that's the bottom line. Just to figure it out, to say, okay, this is what happened. And what one does with that? Probably nothing. But there's something that hangs over me like a wet cloud every time this issue comes up. Just me, personally. Maybe it does you, too. Or maybe you have reached that level of absolute clarity. You become almost zen in your thinking about the events of 9/11. You know what happened. You're at peace with what? Not at peace, but you know what happened. You're at peace with the explanation, even though your explanation may trigger thoughts of violence against your own government, but you or against assassins from the Arab world or whatever. You know, whatever you've come to, if you've arrived there and you're solid in it, well, then stay there if that's what you want to do. I mean, you know, I'm not here to convert anybody. I told people years ago on this radio program, don't come here for information. Don't come here to have me tell you what to do. I'm not in that business. You know, I'm the same boat as you are, pal or palette. I have no idea what the hell's going on anymore. I don't have a clue as to what's going on anymore. We're going to invade Iran? Who knows? Are undersea explosions while the U.S. Navy tests certain sophisticated weapons causing tsunamis to rage against the shores of Indonesia? Who knows? I mean, just, you know, pick one. It's all madness. It's all insanity. There is no pretense in that we are living in an asylum. It's just some of us are more crazy than others, and some of us have found a way to open the windows every once in a while and get out, walk around the grounds. But it's all an asylum, right? I just wanted to get that said. All right, we have a break coming up here. When we come back, we're going to take your phone calls. So stick around. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. Whatever you want to talk about, since we only have an hour left, 45 minutes left of the program tonight. So give us a holler. We'll chat. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 22 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Chris is calling from New York City, listening on the internet. Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
All right. I just listened to your interview with Sophia. It was exceptional. I just want to pass along. I'm from New York City, and a friend of mine is a 9/11 first responder. She was an EMT. Unfortunately, one of the people who was suffering serious health problems from the toxic dust, and, you know, after our government told us, oh, yes, the air is safe to breathe.
In any case,
that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, it is.
In any case, she told me that, you know, she was there when the South Tower went down, and she heard the big explosion before the subsequent collapse and heard all the bombs going boom, 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 that brought that tower down. I know she's not lying to me. She'd have no reason to make up this story. So she told me what happened, and then I proceeded to, you know, start investigating what really happened on 9/11. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sophia's 9/11 Mysteries is probably the best DVD that's out there, and I recommend that everyone see it because it confirms exactly what my friend told me about what happened. And then you start coming across things like, you know, one thing I just would like to mention, I'm sure you're probably familiar with the Project for the New American Century.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, whose members include, you know, Rumsfeld, Cheney, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And they had published a document a year before 9/11 in which they said we need regime change in Iraq and increased military spending.
Well, it even goes back before that. I think it was back in 1996, they sent, or 97, they sent a letter to Bill Clinton.
To Clinton, right.
Right, demanding
to go into Iraq.
And go into it, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, on page 51 of that document, 76 pages long, and they said, you know, that this change could not happen without, quote, a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And then 1 year later it happened, and one of the members of the Project for New American Century is a guy named Dov Zakheim,
mm-hmm.
and he was made chief financial officer of the Pentagon 4 months before 9/11, and as coincidence would have it, he just happened to work for a company called System Planning Corporation, which just happened to specialize in the technology of flying aircraft by remote control. You can do with that information whatever you want.
Yeah,
I draw my own conclusion, and
sure.
If you think that that's just a coincidence, then fine, you can believe that. But
yeah.
I think there's a whole lot more to it.
Well, that's the thing. You can every time somebody turns over a rock in the story, turns over a rock, not Iraq. Every time somebody turns over a rock in this story,
right,
something else goes squiggling, trying to get into the shadows again. This just goes on and on and on. And the thing that pisses me off about the people who are so willing to accept the official story is the fact that they seem to not pay any attention to this massive, massive amount of coincidences that occurred prior to, on, and subsequent to this attack. An attack occurred against this country. We've got the corpses and the hole in Manhattan to justify or to verify that. It did happen. Now, as far as how and why, I don't think anything is more irritating to me than the iconoclasts, if that's the right word, who say, well, no, that's BS. Well, that could, all of those little incidences, all of those little coincidences, right, that occurred, that are just written off as that, coincidences. They mean nothing. It's just the cosmic hoo-ha, rolling the dice, and on that particular day, the numbers all came up the same way. Well, you know, it would be easier for me to start believing that there's a cloud being out there dictating moves than to believe that. Chris, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, all right?
Thank you, Mike.
All right, take care. Hi. Yeah, it's just, there are too many things. And for the people who are willing to write off all the things, all the little tiny things, the big things, the intermediate-sized things, and just say no, 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 no. All that stuff may appear to be pertinent to or have a cause-and-effect relationship or to the events or just a coincidence or yada, yada, yada. All that stuff, no, just write it off. Just sit down and shut up. The events that occurred on September 11th were put together by a bunch of terrorists in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, or someplace. That's where the planning was done, and the 19 suckers that carried it out are dead. End of story. Well, afraid not. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century.
It's about 25 before the hour.
Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Reg writes in, something no one ever talks about, and this is documented, not denied, another one of the coincidences. Marvin Bush, the president's younger brother, was a principal in a company called Securicom that provided security for the World Trade Center, United Airlines, and Dulles International Airport. The company was backed by QAM, a Kuwaiti-American investment firm. And it goes on. That's kind of the point. just so many issues, so many coincidences. But that was last hour. This is this hour. Back to your phone calls. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from the Catskills, listening on, I guess, the Internet. Hey, AJ.
Hey, handsome. How are you tonight?
I'm much better.
Good. I'm glad you sound better, too.
Right.
Yep. Listen, before I get into what I want to get into, two quick things I just spotted on the Internet. First, you got to check out the Red Menace has put out a website called Can We Ask?
Can We Ask?
Yep, and that's a website that attacks Obama. So that'll be fun.
CanWeAsk.com.
Yep. And then there's a report here on CNN's website about an admiral who had sex at the White House in the early 90s. Now the guy's name is John, get this, Stufflebeam.
Stufflebeam, of course.
Yeah. And if that's not good enough, he's a rear admiral. Make this up.
He's a rear admiral.
I do not make this up.
Name Stufflebeam.
Yes. Okay, so what I wanted to tell you was that I meant to call you a couple of weeks ago when Clinton got the endorsement from the North Carolinian governor. He sat there or stood there and said that she makes Rocky look like a pansy. And I can't tell you how offended I was by that, because it's one more time it's Southern code, and this time directed at those. And by the way, I don't believe there's such a thing as homophobia. I think there's just bigotry.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to put it, yeah.
So it's another type of bigotry directed at, in this case, those who want to chop in half our homosexual brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And she stood there and laughed at that joke and did not the next day say the governor was out of line. And in this ridiculous tit-for-tat battle where words supposedly matter, I thought that should have been an opportunity for her to say, you know what, he just stepped over the line at that point. And it leads me to this whole, you know, Hillary Clinton has made me feel like I stepped through the looking glass.
I know.
Because we all spent the 90s adoring these two. Actually, him. I never did like her. But I never thought she was evil. I just thought she should shut up. I've never been one who wants to hear from the spouse of the elected official, be that a person, a male or female. I'm not into that.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, did these two turn like zombies, like the undead, or were they this way all along, and did they just hoodwink us?
Well, I think they've been this way all along, but being in a position of power rather than a position of seeking power, I think that put a little different spin on it. But the Clintons, if anything, and especially Hillary, after the assault that she went through, I mean, let's face it, well, regardless of one's opinion of Hillary Clinton as a presidential nominee, she was just battered, as was her husband, by
every day
for years. So,
yeah.
In that process, I think Hillary Clinton learned, and God knows I would have too. She knows, she has complete awareness. If she's in North Carolina, she knows what the code words are in North Carolina. If she's in Iowa, she knows the code words there.
Yeah.
That's just, I think, a result of having one's total existence threatened constantly the way the Clintons were.
Yeah.
And again, back in the late 90s, you could not have found on radio a bigger defender of Bill and Hillary Clinton than me.
Right.
But something happened. Yeah. Something happened. And I think the only thing I can come up with, this unbridled, out of control lust for power has just altered everything about them. When I look at Bill Clinton now, his heart bypass surgery might have had something to do with it too. I've read several articles now that say people who go through that can not will, but can come out of that with kind of an altered sense of who they are and what they're about, and the bottom line on that can be kind of a nasty attitude that comes along with it. I don't know. When I watch Bill Clinton, The only time I ever saw him wag his finger in 8 years was when he said he didn't have sex with that woman. Now it seems like every single time he's doing one of his campaign speeches, he winds up finger wagging. There's something going on, AJ. You're right. You're right. Maybe they have been bitten on the neck. I don't know.
Well, and it's you know, I'm not the first to have brought up the fact that he has trashed the legacy that was worth keeping, that was worth mentioning. It's a damn shame. Even those of us who were fans of the Clinton presidency now are sick of him. And she in particular has made me feel like, you know, up is down and down is up. And she has made me go from not caring for her to virtually hating her as much as any Republican. And we've discussed this, and so you know how much that is.
I know. I hear you loud and clear.
Listen, thanks for your good work. Better dead than red.
All right, I hear you. Thanks, AJ. See. Take care, man. I appreciate you checking in. I can remember in Chicago, probably, it was Christmas 99. I remember exactly when it was. And Kathy and I were at a Christmas party in the condo building where we lived. There were like six flats. And we went downstairs to a party. And, these were professional folks. I forget what they did. It's a very nice dinner party and then a cocktail party afterwards. There were about maybe five couples, maybe 10 of us. And after dinner, we were I got into discussion. Drink in hand, you know how it goes. I got into a discussion with a guy at the party about the assault on Bill Clinton, and he was kind of a weasel, kind of a, you know, weasel words, kind of, he was kind of afraid to stand up and say, I think Clinton is, a rat and a scum. Obviously, because this guy probably made an awful lot of money in, trading on NASDAQ during the Clinton years. But anyway, at one point in this discussion, a woman came over and kind of forced her way in. Turned out it was his wife. Kind of forced her way into the conversation. And at one point, I just looked at her and said, well, why do you hate Bill Clinton so much? And she, drink in hand, carefully coiffed, very well made up, nicely dressed, the right kind of understated jewelry that must have cost as much for a bracelet as I would make working at WLS in 6 months. But she looked at me, and with venom just spurting out of her mouth, I felt like, you know, oh, my God, I'm about to be attacked by a cobra. She said, why do I hate him? Because he's an effing liar. Only she didn't say effing. And it was like, oh, my God, you know, what am I going to do? This nice-looking middle-class or upper-middle-class white woman just used the F word on me. And so I just kind of slunk away. So from that, And being utterly shocked, and it was a defense every single night I went on the air, a defense of Bill and by extension Hillary Clinton, and now to turn around to have this 180 go off in my head, I'm just saying, you know, just like AJ says, I'm getting dizzy from all this. Back to your phone calls. Jim is calling from Illinois, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey Jim, welcome to the program.
Hello Mike, I just wanted to say the thing is, I think that the reason for 9/11 is that the power-mad leaders are trying to get the people to believe in religious pie-in-the-sky afterlife and not to think about how to improve their lives on this earth. It's just like when the old men used to say, keep the women barefoot and pregnant.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing. They want the people to be stupid about how to improve their lives.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You know my position on religion, Jim, and you also know my position on people who advocate, some of the more extreme points of view of religion. To me, they're all extreme. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Quick break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
See the TV glowing. Ah, life is walking by. Hear the music flowing. Ah, life is walking by. See the loving tree growing. Ah, life is walking by. An empty boat starts rowing. That's when you're knowing life is walking you by.
it is the weekend. It's about 10 till the hour, 10 minutes before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Sharon Gordy. Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. Back to your phone calls. Who do we have here? We have Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge. Welcome
to
the program.
How you doing, Joe? I missed you last week.
I know. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Marge. Happy birthday to you.
And thank you very much. That doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. And there's a reason for that. Listen, happy birthday. It was the 4th, right?
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, did you get the check we sent?
Oh, you sent a check? No. It must have gotten lost in the mail.
I guess it did. Oh, well, maybe next year, all right?
I can always look forward to that. Besides that, I wanted you to know that last Friday was National Lay Day. Did you get yours?
National what?
Lay Day.
Oh, National Lay Day?
Yeah.
Did I get my lay?
A mile-long one out of 81,000 flowers in Hawaii.
Well, that's good to know. Thanks, Marge.
You thought I was talking dirty, didn't you?
No, not at all. I knew what you were saying. But the real reason you called...
You know, the California Nurses Association needs a gold star.
Yes, they do. That's a great organization.
You know, any other man would be dead. I love it.
You're talking about Schwarzenegger?
Well, they were the ad that they ran for about Cheney the last time he had his heart attack. I mean, they're going.
Oh, yeah, that was a great ad. If it weren't for his medical care, he'd be dead by now.
Right. Cadillac care.
Cadillac care.
They're not saying too much about any of the plans of the present candidates that are running. That, you know, it should be, you know, single payer. You know, every damn thing in this country is for profit.
Yeah.
Except your salary and mine.
That's true. Who was it that said, if you can't buy it, it doesn't exist?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that starts a whole other avenue of thought.
It does. It does. It's not a good place to go this late at night.
Yeah, huh. But they were on Moyer's Journal tonight. By the way, he's got a new book out.
Yeah.
So
I've heard about it. That's all I've heard about. Moyer's
on Democracy. It's something about his speeches.
The California Nurses Association?
No, Moyer's.
No, but they were on his program?
Yeah, they were talking about, I don't know what her name was. She was the head of the California Nurses Association, mm-hmm. and they're picketing. And, you know, following Arnold around every place he went. Mm-hmm. And when he was making a speech someplace, they were picketing outside, and somebody made it inside the building. And he said, don't pay any attention to them. That's the special interest group.
Oh my
and I
God.
Thought, you.
I know. It's a shame that we...
The monumental gall of some of these people. They can stand there and smile at you and lie through their teeth.
Yeah, and to think that we live in a country where a comprehensive health care available for everyone is considered to be a special interest. You know?
All the people that work for the government has got the best health care in the world. Now, the thing that they didn't make quite clear in this piece tonight, and I would be interested to know, you know, while they're working, fine, they've got this magnificent coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that the Congress people, you know, and high up government, you know, president and that
sure.
kind of stuff, it all continues on after they're out of office. Does that hold true for the people that work for the government, like in the Treasury Department and the other, you know, sort of more average Joe people that work for the government?
You know, I think it does, Marge. I'm not.
Ain't that a kick in the ass?
It is that and then some. I'm not absolutely certain about that. But I do believe that that's one of the perks in going to work for the federal government. Once you qualify, and I believe you qualify on your first day, or I don't know, maybe there's some stipulations. But once you qualify, it's yours. I believe.
You can actually have a medical person make decisions on your health care, and you don't have to wait for some insurance agent to decide, well, we're going to pay for that or we're not going to pay for that.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Gee. Something that actually makes sense. Before I forget, there's another little crusade that I'm going to start, and your audience might be just a place to drop the dime.
Okay.
I ran across an article that I knew it existed, but I couldn't find any proof of it beside my own memory, which is questionable. Many years ago, 20, 30 years maybe perhaps, somebody came up with the idea that if you grind up old rubber tires, which they don't know what the hell to do with them,
right.
And mix it with asphalt and put it on the roads, that it lasts.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And they've had different stretches of roads in different parts of the country. Right now, they're going crazy because this winter has been particularly bad. And they got potholes, you know, to go halfway to China. Because the stuff that they use on the roads, I think, is related to peanut butter and lasts about as long. But,
well, especially in your neck of the woods. Don't forget, I lived in Chicago for 4 years and almost lost about six axles. But anyway.
Well, I can well imagine. I don't know that it's that bad all over the rest of the country. But these people, because they're individual states and they can control the little guys, you know, they've got a stranglehold over these people. And we don't want you to change the laws that says that we have to improve the quality of the materials that we use to put on the roads, so that we can come back every other year and renew our contract and spend thousands or millions of taxpayers' dollars to resurface your damn roads. Do I sound angry?
No, that's called the American way. Marge, we're out of time.
Yeah, well, don't cut me off. I want to hear the end. I want to hear your cutout song.
All right, I'll just put you on hold. You have a nice weekend, okay?
You too. Hello to Kathy for Mother's Day.
I'll do it. All right, thanks, Marge. Take care. I guess this is the song she wanted to hear. Oh. All right, listen, thanks for hanging out with us this week. I appreciate it. Take care. I'll see you Monday night. Okay? Okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.